Good afternoon, Chicagoland and whole wide world web that no stop. Hey, good afternoon. This is Chef Elaine Alexander broadcasting from a bright sunny day in Chicago. We have been patiently awaiting spring, and I think we actually got
take that, Denver. Take that, Denver. You walk and have that.
So as you can tell, we have a guest caller today, Renard Michael Mayfield, and this avid sports fan and foodie has brought to my mind a few topics to talk about in regards to tailgating and, you know, going to Hooters and eating hot wings and watching the whatever sport you're into. So it's
let me interject. If you hear me get excited from time to time, she did say I'm an avid sports fan, but she's lucky I love her. But I'm watching the NBA playoffs right now on mute. So when she describes me as an avid sports fan, I'm multitasking over here.
Okay. All right, so we won't make this a very long one so you can get back to your game, but I did want to discuss food trends and hot new items or anything like that in connection with food. I've always seen this like really strong thing. You watch the game and you eat. You watch the game and you drink beer. How do you celebrate your favorite team, et cetera, et cetera?
Now, when we're talking about celebrating my favorite team, it depends on the day, but there's always some beverage. I enjoy a nice cold beverage nearby. You want to call it libation, you want to call it a beverage, you want to call it a hard drink. There's a beverage nearby at all times. Now, would I pair that with some weeks that might be a good burger, some weeks that could be a turkey burger, a beef burger, a salmon burger, depending on the mood. Other times it's going to be some hot wings, or I'm not even a big hot wings fan, and I say this with great prejudice. Chicago is the only city I know of where you buy wings and you get the whole wing. Because every place else you say wings, they give you drumettes and wing dings. I want the whole wing. Give me some Harolds. Give me some JJ. Give me some sharks. And the list can go on. Give me the whole wing. And I'm not even talking about just the two pieces. I want that little broken wing that you barely do anything off of that you still got to lick the sauce off of. I want the whole wing. So I might pair it with some wings. I might pair it with a burger. So, other weeks, once the playoffs get into full swing and summer is really here, I might be watching the game or listening to the game while I'm outside grilling.
Right.
But in the wintertime, I might have some a good bowl of chili brewing or some pizza.
Yeah.
But one way or the other, there's some special adult libation nearby.
Okay. So, we're getting into the warmer days, and Chicago is very, very grateful to see them come. We didn't, you know, kind of delayed this year. However,
Denver. And for those of you all that don't know what I'm talking about, Denver and nearby had a whole lot of snow last night and the day before.
They did.
Take that.
I'm really, really happy with that. One of the things I like to talk about on the show is origins of food memory and how people get tied into certain meals at certain times of the year and how it's transmitted to the next generation from grandmama or grandpa to, you know, the babies helping out in the kitchen. With food and sports being so highly connected in such a food-centered city like Chicago, what do you expect when you go to a game?
And when I go to the game itself, or when I go to watch a game at a friend's house?
No,
that's two different things.
You got hot tickets, you're in the skybox, you're in the bleachers, wherever you prefer to be, and you know, you've got concessions running around and you've got all these different treats that are offered through.
Yeah, well, see, you just put forth a good difference. I've been in the luxury boxes. Mm-hmm. I've been in floor seats, and I've been in the cheap seats. Whichever seats you're gonna you're in, it will dictate the type of food you get.
Absolutely.
I have gone to the United Center, and they have high-end five-star restaurants in the stadium.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I've had Steak and Lobster before or after the game.
Yeah.
I have gone to the game and been in a luxury box, and they have a total spread from hot wings to burgers to sliders onto nachos trays and what have you, and then a special Bailey's dessert cart comes out later where you're drinking Bailey's out of chocolate cups. I've had plenty of orders of nachos. I'm a Sox fan, and I've gone to Wrigley Field for the Cubs Sox game and ordered the big old $23, $24 thing of nachos that comes in a Cubs helmet. I've gone to the Sox game during the 2005 playoffs, and they have just about every type of pizza there, from Connie's, and now they've switched on to a different pizza distributor. I've had bratwurst. I've had special thick pieces of bacon you can have.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to food and going to a sporting event here in Chicago, there is no limit, and people claim there's quote unquote tailgate food or stadium food. I'm glad that I'm from Chicago and I go to events in Chicago, because what the traditional stadium foods versus what we can get in the stadium are two different things. We can get just about everything in the stadiums.
Well, yeah, I mean, Chicago runs on its belly, if nothing else. And some things are, like, totally entrenched in sports as far as dining. Where do you think, in your opinion, a lot of that started out?
It started out as what you can eat in your hand without spilling. You can eat a hot wing in your hand. You can eat a nacho in your hand. You can eat a hot dog in your hand. Add that to the fact that Chicago and New York, two big baseball towns, are big hot dog and sausage places. So sausage-based foods are very good, big in ballparks. You got your megaphones with the different popcorns in them. Chicago's a well-known popcorn place.
Yeah.
So from Garrett's to Nuts on Clark, and you can order nuts at the different stadiums. So it comes down to what is good in your hands. Something that you don't need a plate for. But your ballparks today, they have the luxury locations, or they may have a location that you can go sit in and continue to watch the game until you finish your food and go back to your seat.
Yes.
So
when you're not in stadium,
the original stadium foods came down to what you can eat in your hand from your seat. Whether you went to the concession stand or the hot dog guys were walking around or the nacho guys were walking around, it comes down to what you could do by hand. It got to a point where now they got gourmet people. Major corporations are trying to get their food inside of these stadiums nowadays.
Yeah, it's big business. It's very big business. So when you are not in the stadium, where's your favorite? Go ahead, give them a shout out to your favorite bar or favorite restaurant to watch the game and eat junk food.
I would have to say if I decided I wanted to go watch the game at a bar, it's actually a suburban bar. It's called 115 Bourbon Street. They got just about everything in there, and that place has expanded beyond to what it used to be, to being even more. They always had the giant rooms. Now they have three places with stages on them. They have a true club in the back, a sports bar in the front. Just about everything is on the menu. They have plenty of beers. You have that spot. And then there's this spot that I love going to. And Bolingbrook.
Okay.
It's called the Beer Market.
Okay.
They have over 450 beers at all times and 50 on tap.
I was wondering why you sounded like you was drooling a little bit.
450 beers and 50 in addition to 50 more on tap. And then everybody knows bar food and sliders. And here in Chicago, we love our chickens. We're not real big on the chicken and waffles like other parts of the country.
No, not really.
I'm sorry, when I go to the beer market, they have a chicken slider made out of the chicken is obviously chicken, fried chicken, breast, and it's a slider, and the bread is waffles, corners of waffles.
Nice.
You're eating slider, chicken and waffle sliders.
All right, I can see that. I can see that working really well.
I didn't expect that. I mean, it's at the place called the Beer Market, and they have more than one in the Chicago area, but that was the first one. I have to admit, I was dating a woman, and she was working in that mall, and while I was waiting on her, I turned my head, and I saw out of the corner of my eye this thing that said the Beer Market. I said, babe, I'll be back.
You abandoned her in the mall for the Beer Market?
And I had to continue working. And so, honestly, whenever she asked me to come pick her up, I did not mind because I had my spot.
Got you. Okay. So, you're more a foodie than you are a chef. I know you do like to cook, and you're very much, you know, abreast of what's going on in the arena of food. There's a lot of marketing happening this spring in regards to hard root beer versus like hard apple ales and stuff like that. Do you like them? Would you buy it?
Well, first of all, you're right about the marketing aspect of it. They are getting a lot more advertising than they used to have. But hard root beers and brewed root beer drinks are not new. And there's two different kinds. Beer drinkers have been onto them where, in a way, they were root beer and beer has a similar process. And in the fermenting process, they can basically make a root beer that's basically almost has that same process, and it's an alcoholic root beer. And then there's the kind that are similar to your Mike's Hard Lemonades, or there's another company that has a hard orange drink. And it's almost tastes like it's a root beer that had alcohol added to it.
Okay.
Both of them taste good, and I had them. And personally, if I'm tailgating or I'm throwing a barbecue, I might throw some in the cooler, but it's not going to be the only thing in the cooler.
Yeah.
Or if I'm and me personally, for some of the time, I'm that person that would go to the website and go look up the list of drinks where you could have yourself a root beer based mixed drink. And you can decide if you want to add yourself a rum or add yourself a tequila or add yourself a liqueur. Those three types of things are often mixed with root beers, a liqueur, a tequila, or a rum. Then there's the opportunity to just sit back and enjoy them. It's a nice something to add to your repertoire of things you like to drink, but me personally, if I'm a beer drinker, I might kind of lean towards the kind that is made towards the beer kind. But if I'm not in the mood for a beer, I might want a hard root beer that has tastes more soda-like or pop-like.
Okay.
And then if I'm in a mood just to get to that special place or that tipsy place, I'm gonna grab me a mixed drink. But when it comes to all of them, it just has its different moods, and it's not that something like me personally, there are some times where I just go buy some beer and put it in the refrigerator, not because I need to have 12 beers in one sitting that night, but it's just something good had to have in the refrigerator. I won't say the same thing about that root beer drink. I think part of the reason it's getting this marketing push right now because it is an excellent something to add to the repertoire of your cooler. But I don't know if it's that something that I'm just going to constantly buy at the store.
Okay. Would you put it in the category of a girl drink?
I don't know if I would call it a quote-unquote girl drink. And I know we are being quote-unquote sexist when we say this, but there are girl drinks are often considered sweet drinks.
Right.
And being that I'm a beer drinker, when people think of beer, they think of bitter taste. But I know this, and you've experienced it. Being that there are so many beers out there, and we just talked about the beer market having 500 beers, 450 plus 50 on tap, there's a beer for everyone. I even came across a chocolate bock that you fell in love with, and you said, and you normally hate beer. And
yeah.
You're like, okay, I'm going to drink this.
Yeah.
And my sister loves a berry white.
Okay.
But there's a beer for everybody, and I wouldn't necessarily call anything a girl drink. There's another drink that I love to make at parties. I can't say it. Well, I don't know what the classification of your show is. Is it considered explicit lyrics?
No.
The name of the drink. Okay. I'll say.
It has
Royal
a controversial type of title, that kind of thing.
People know about the blue MF-er.
Right.
It's not that, but it has that type of title in it. It's called a Royal Cuff. I'll just call it a Royal Cuff, and it's really not the word cuff is not the word.
Right. Okay.
And what I like about that particular drink, and I've introduced it to both men and women, and when I describe it, I said it has the sweetness and flavor of a woman's drink, but the kick and the punch of a man's drink. And what I like about that particular drink, it can be drank in the summer or the winter. It's got cranberry, pineapple, and orange juice. It also has peach schnapps. Now, you hear all the sweet.
Right.
And that's where all the sweet is based. Peach schnapps, cranberry, pineapple, and orange juice. But then here comes the man's kick, hence the name Royal in the name of the drink. And it's Crown Royal based.
Okay.
And for people that claim they don't like brown liquors, you don't taste that much crown in it. You're tasting all of that sweetness that's covering it up. But that person said, if I'm going to have me a drink, I want to feel it. Oh,
right.
You don't feel
I mean,
it.
You know.
You don't feel it.
Right. I've never been too much into the fruity sweet drinks because normally that reminds me of dessert or like a slushy.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
frequently I don't particularly care for that when I'm drinking. And, you know, I'm a whiskey drinker, and I'll do some mixed drinks, but sweet doesn't always cut it for me.
Well, I do like and this is for me, I'm not particular on sweet drinks, but what I do like is the versatility of this drink is, although it's one part Crown Royal, one part peach schnapps, and one parts of everything else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the basis of the drink. But you can cut the drink by adding more Crown Royal if you want less sweetness. Or you can cut the drink by adding more peach schnapps if you want it more on the sweet side.
Got you. Okay.
That's what I like about the versatility of that drink. I mean, one of the things that people – I say the worst place to actually learn your drink taste is in a bar, because they're following recipes. The best place to learn your drinks is at home, because you get to learn what you like. You're not stuck.
Right, you're not
by the recipe and what the recipe says and what the bartender is allowed to pour.
Okay, I could agree with that.
Now you might be able to figure out the general, like, oh, that tastes good. What's in it, and then you can go home and get to your editing of the recipe.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to the way chefs do in general, they may learn what's in a recipe, but then they go home or they go back to their own kitchen and they put their own special spin on it.
Absolutely. I always say, there's a red velvet craze going on right now. It's one of the most requested cakes. But there's
and I hate that cake. Give me a regular chocolate cake. Please, give me a chocolate cake. I don't believe in faking the funk.
No, it's not that. It's kind of a throwback. It's kind of like with fashion. You know, every 20 years, things go back and look like right now they're pulling out bell bottoms on the mannequin.
No, they did that in the 90s. They did it in the 60s. I know.
Right.
Yeah, they're
going to
bring them
back
and they own skin every time.
that kind of happens sometimes with food, and the red velvet craze is just that. That's a recipe that got developed during the Depression era while we were in the middle of a world war. And chocolate was rationed, and it was one of the most prized things you could get. And
okay, I can understand that. Don't ration my chocolate now. Don't ration my chocolate now.
That's what happened.
You can give me a chocolate cake.
Right.
You give me a chocolate cake.
And I understand that. Yeah, exactly. But so right now, everybody's requesting red velvet, and red velvet can be widely different from recipe to recipe.
Oh my gosh. My mom's
different.
From scratch recipe versus that out the box recipe are two different things.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's not even that the out the box recipe is wrong, it's a different spin on it.
Exactly. And as someone who is a pastry chef, I've run into a lot of different palates when it comes to cake, and a lot of people who don't know what scratch cake tastes like prefer the taste that they're used to that's manufactured and on the Duncan Hines or whatever in the box. It's completely a different product. But you can say those same kinds of things with pairings of food and liquor. And I remember when it became a quote-unquote new concept to pair beer with your meal and not just wine.
Well, I one of the things I point out to a lot of people, I come across a lot of wine drinkers, especially women, when I remind them that when you drink beer, you're using the same part of your palate as you do for wine, they're willing to take the beer challenge test. You and I have participated in things where it might be fun to have different beers, and then we can have a bunch of French fries, and then you have a bunch of different sauces. You're not necessarily pairing with the French fries. You're more or less pairing with the sauces.
Mm-hmm.
It is beer drinkers that understand the pairing. I remember when I went to Michael Jordan's steakhouse that he has on North Michigan Avenue here.
Mm-hmm.
I asked the waiter to bring me the beer list that goes well with the steak.
Okay.
And the waiter instantly said, "You're a beer drinker." I was like, "Okay." He's like, I was being taken out for my birthday, and they asked, "How did you know he was a beer drinker?" He said, "Because only a beer drinker would ask for the beer list that is expected to go good with a steak." And they had a list, and they had a description of why this beer was good with this list.
Yeah, it's very key to the same thing that wine does.
And one of the things that some people think a beer is designed to do is to have its own flavor. And yes, when you're having it by itself, yes. But just like when you have cognac in a cigar, or bourbon in a cigar, it's designed to bring out other. They're not by themselves. They may have one flavor, but they're also designed to bring out another part of flavor. I've had a good scotch in a steak. It's the entire experience. It's not just one or the other.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm big on that, especially considering a lot of people eat pastry at the end of the meal. And therefore, for me, I always tell them, how are you going to have a 5-star experience on your plate and then end the night with a Walmart cake? That doesn't really make sense to me. You know, you get this discount product after this fabulous filet mignon. You go, what is wrong with that? The other thing that bugs me is frequently, for whatever reason, a lot of people believe that if they're having cocktails for an event, that they cannot or will not eat sweets at the same time.
I know where it comes from. And it's less about the cocktail side and more about something you learn when you're a kid. For example, if you drink something, if you're eating syrup on waffles, sometimes it's hard to drink something sweet with that because your palate is not strong enough to taste the difference between the sweet in the syrup or the sweet in the drink. And many times people don't understand that it's not the same thought process. You have to drink a dessert wine that complements each other, or you have to drink, or you have to drink a contrasting drink so it brings one out of the other. They don't. They're thinking about the taste of that drink by itself. They're not thinking about the pairing process because.
Well, okay, and I can agree with that.
They're not thinking like a sommelier. They're thinking about a person that's eating a burger in the afternoon on a Tuesday.
Okay, but what I'm getting from some of my clients is not so much that, you know, it will or will not go with each other. It's more of, I don't eat sweets when I'm drinking because it'll make me sick, and I've not ever had that experience.
Well, that just comes also down to the type of drink that they're having, too. Because, like,
okay.
Some people, for one, well, I'll give you another example with my personal experience. And it has nothing to do with alcohol.
Okay.
Drinking certain sugary drinks will make me nauseous. I can't drink Grape Pop by itself and not have any food to cut it. Because I will feel tipsy off of Grape Pop. More tipsy off of Grape Pop than I will off of beer or wine.
That's interesting.
Yes, it's because my sugar intake, I don't like a whole lot of sweets. For example, my grandmother used to give me Fannie Mae chocolates for Valentine's Day every year until I pointed out to her, Grandmama, sometimes I still have the old box, but when you give me the new box. So me and sugar don't get along, so I would tend to bet it might be sometimes it's about the sugar, or it might be, for example, let's say a person is drinking a Bailey's drink or a rum chata drink or any dairy-based drink, that the mixing of the dairy with their dessert may not agree with their system. Or it just be, you and I both know when it comes to certain things, it's just mind over matter. If you're telling yourself you're going to feel this way, you're going to feel that way.
Right, right. But at the same time, some of those customers who think that they can't drink any tea will order a pastry that's infused with liquor, and you go, okay, I'm not following your train of thought here. This doesn't make any sense.
Well, I'll tell you something that I did one year. I was going out with a particular woman, and our birthdays were only 9 days apart.
Okay.
Her birthday was actually on April 20th, and mine is on April 29th. And one particular year, her birthday fell on Easter.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, and we was like, how can we get drunk on your birthday and not look crazy for looking like we drink and getting drunk on Easter? It's Jesus' day. So that particular year, I started a tradition. It was called the wine tasting. I did a wine tasting either on her birthday or my birthday every year for about 6 or 7 years. My friends fell in love with that. It wasn't anything special. It wasn't like it was super perfect. On that first one, we just told everybody to bring a bottle. It had no theme around it. We had a bunch of cheese and crackers, bought different types of cheese and crackers, from good cheeses to quote-unquote not-so-good cheeses.
Okay.
That following year, we did it again. And that following year, instead of just cheese and crackers, we added heavier foods from your spaghettis and what have you. Then another year, we did it again. We had, it almost seemed like a New Orleans-based thing. We had crab cakes. We had salmon croquette. We even had a deep-fried turkey that year. And we had been doing it for so many years. And then one year, I was just going to take a break.
And
all my friends woke up on my birthday, that knew my birthday, and said, we didn't get the text this year asking about the, telling us about the wine tasting that you do every year. So this particular year, I said, all right, everybody, if you want to bring a wine, bring a sangria, and I'm going to make a homemade sangria.
Mm-hmm.
I made a homemade sangria, and we barbecued. And I had tons of different sangrias, and we had barbecue. Part of the problem is not that people don't know it can't be done. They have not experienced it. And what I can say over those years, me and my friends learned the different experiences behind what foods go with what and what our personal palate likes.
Okay, so would you put it more into a category such as like an old wives' tale that these things, you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that?
I wouldn't say old wives' tale. I would put it in the, they may think, sometimes old wives' tales are based in truth. Sometimes old wives' tales are simply just that, old wives' tale.
Yeah.
I will put it in, somebody might actually not like liquor and drinks, but they, if they've never tested the theory, how can you know? Or okay, you might, or this drink might not go well with what you've been eating, and it did make you feel sick. And just because you had that one thing that made you feel sick don't mean the next combination will make you feel sick. So you have to put your friends in different situations to where they can taste things. And one thing I know you do, you will invite your different clients to your hangout parties where we're going to play board games, and they experience them in a different context. Like, because I'll never forget that your rum-infused cakes. I swear I thought I got more drunk off that rum-infused cake that you gave me that was the size of a square, a little itty-bitty square, than I did off the drink that I had in my hand.
And for our listening audience, just don't listen to that, because don't be besmirching the name of Butter Rum Pound Cake, sir.
That Butter Rum Pound Cake, I put it on a plate. That plate,
I think you were already
by the time
drunk.
I finished it.
I think you were already drunk.
That was very possible. No, but wait a minute. You're trying to ride me out, and everybody that bit into that was like, whoa, we weren't ready for it. We all ate ours. We just weren't ready for what was in there. I'm not going to besmirch the name, because I think another thing that you did was you put more in that rum-based pound cake that day than what you normally would do. Because later on, you later said a little. And then on that same day, I think we also tilted upside down some watermelon-based Bacardi into an actual watermelon.
Yeah.
I remember that.
We were going hard that week.
I think it was your birthday weekend one particular year, if I remember correctly, because we bought that watermelon from the Mississippi watermelons guy that's always on 100th and Hostel.
Yeah.
Trust me, I remember. That was one expensive, good watermelon. Almost made me mad that we messed that watermelon up with the rum.
Yeah, on
next
occasion.
Next time we're going to buy a cheap watermelon out of Dominic's, a store that doesn't exist anymore.
good luck with that one.
and put some vodka in it and take the ice cream scoop to it. But all this being said, you all going to think I'm a lush, which I am. And although I am a lush, I have a love for food based out of impatience.
Okay, what do you mean?
I was one of those little kids that would come home from school even when I was 2, 3, 4 years old and wanted some food, and I begged the babysitter to make me something.
Okay.
I even had a nickname called Beanie Weenie because I love porks and beans and Beanie Weenies.
Okay.
By the time I was 6 or 7, I wanted to actually cook for myself. I was that kid that my mom tells this story that my parents didn't know if I was, for lack of a, how can I put it, politically correct word, if I was a little fruity, because one year I asked for a kitchen set as a little boy. And what my father did, he didn't agree to a full kitchen set. He did agree to, which, as an adult, looks more like a Fisher-Price hot plate. And a hot plate still has a manly feel to it. That being said, some of the women my mom has told that story to, and my mom and the women have all said, thank you for not besmirching his ability to learn how to cook, because I can cook.
Right.
It's not that I'm a chef. I cook what I like, and I will test things. I will spend money. I've spent money and messed up a few things. I've messed up a few lobsters, and I've made some great lobsters. I've done scallops, salmon, you name the seafood, I've probably tested it out.
Yeah,
When it comes to steak, I've made it a million different ways. And don't get me started on chicken. That old that old stereotype that black folks love chicken. I don't mind that one.
Well,
I do not mind
that
one because I can cook chicken in every different way.
Exactly. You have to look at, and it doesn't sink home for a lot of people sometimes, but you have to look at food as not just pleasurable, it's also nutrition, it's also medicine, it's also social. And those of us who are really, you know, in the industry and dealing with different clients, you find different heritage and cultures that do things different. You find some of the quote-unquote old wives' tales are actually accurate when it comes to if you've got a fever, you know, you eat these things or those things to get rid of it, and all of that is present. A lot of folks don't understand that about food. They just never really think about it until someone, some smart ass like me, comes along and says, hey, you do understand that you're blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yeah, I guess you're right.
I have recommended a million hot toddies to people, and people didn't believe me, and they work. I came across a person that had never had a drink in her life. I recommended that her husband make a hot toddy for her. He did. She was like, I don't drink. And then her husband was like, well, I made you one last night. That's why you was feeling fine. I said, no, you didn't. She said, you remember that thing that you said tasted so good? It had a little Hennessy. It had a lot of honey, a little lemon, and your favorite tea. And I mixed it together, and you was happy.
Yeah.
So that old wives' tale that a hot toddy works, a hot toddy really does work.
It does. It does. You know, it gets you to
sleep. Even if it's only making me, even if it's only sweating me and putting me to sleep, hey,
exactly.
It works. I don't care what the reason was.
Right, right. Because sometimes, you know, that nagging cough you can't get to stop will keep you up all night. Hot toddy will fix that.
if nothing else, it'll put you to sleep.
Right. Okay, so my million-dollar question that I ask everybody that comes on here, especially the chefs, is what was your earliest food memory?
Earliest food memory or earliest food cooking memory? Because I think that's two different things.
It is two different things, and I'm more curious as to your first memory, not something that you remember cooking, but something that spurred your interest in food.
I think my earliest interest in food goes back to what I was describing and when I wanted to learn how to cook. But my first food memory,
uh-huh.
I remember my second birthday party and my Big Bird cake.
Really?
People used to tell me, that's impossible that you remember that. I'm like, no, I remember my Big Bird cake. And I can describe the entire scene and never have seen the pictures from it. And my mom would go pull out the pictures and show me, like, no, he's not lying. He remembers the cake. I'm like, and I'm not memorizing the pictures. I remember sitting in that high chair getting ready to throw that Big Bird cake at somebody.
Oh, wow.
Yes. But that is my earliest, in general, that's my earliest memory. It's not even just my earliest food memory. My earliest memory is my second birthday. I remember that morning, my mom waking up. Asked and said, you know today's your birthday. I'm like, okay. She said, how many years do you think you are? I put up two fingers. I sat in that. And then later on that day, we had that cake. Well, I had that cake and was about to make sure everybody else had that cake too.
That's really interesting. I think that's probably the earliest one yet. Most people answer that question. They're about 4 or 5 years old, maybe a little older, and, you know, grandmama was cooking and you ended up in the kitchen with her, that kind of thing. But
most of my earliest cooking memories are about 4, 5, and 6 years old. I mean, as a kid, the first thing that I considered I cooked, I was 6 years old, I cooked a hot dog. Now, most people don't consider that cooking, but to a six-year-old, I feel like I just was a gourmet chef. And then I also remember, and being in Chicago, you remember this. I guarantee you remember this. Do you remember the book fairs that used to come to the schools every year?
They still do, yeah.
Okay. Well, I had heard they weren't going to have them, but that book fair, when they had that big old book fair, one of the earliest books that I bought was it was called The Microwave Cookbook for Kids. That was my first cookbook.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know if they're still doing them, but out here in the suburban areas, yeah, my kids have always had them.
But that book fair thing, and that was the one thing that my parents did do. We weren't exactly well off, but we definitely weren't poor. And all of the other things on a school year that you want your parents to spend money on, my parents would ration out the money. I mean, they would ration it out. When the book fair came around, they didn't care if I came home with 30 books.
Yeah.
You can read, if you asking for 30 books and you actually plan to read these books, my parents wouldn't mind spending $200-$300.
Oh yeah.
That year that I got that cookbook, I cooked everything in that microwave cookbook for kids within a week.
Oh wow.
Within a week. And it wasn't like it was a small thin book. It wasn't a thick book, but my dad was like, I'm getting sick and tired of this microwave food for dinner. And my mom was like, man, shoot. If you want to cook.
Right, take the pressure off me. I'm good with it. I'm kind of like that with any kind of book, too. As you know, there's probably a couple hundred of books in my apartment. But there's been years where that's all I gave out for Christmas was I gave out books to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
We are reading.
I swear my mom, she collects cookbooks and she actually uses them. I had to finally introduce her to the fact that she has an iPad.
And she can get them digital.
Yeah. Not only can she get them digital, like, mom, it's a whole lot easier to cook with your iPad in the kitchen than it is to try to hold that page open while you're trying to cook.
Well, let's take it even further. It's easier to search for what you're looking for. I'm not digging through your index and going, no, it's not this book. I got to find the other one. What book was that in?
Right. Well, that too, because also she has an iPad and a different recipe apps. I'm like, mom, you don't have to buy a million cookbooks anymore. Mm-hmm. There's a million apps out there, whether they're the free ones or the pay ones. So every year we introduce my mom to a new function on her iPad. And the cookbook aspect of it, and I used to try to explain to people what was so great about an iPad or a tablet in general was its versatility.
Yeah.
Because, yes, there are cell phones, and some people still just use a phone for what a phone is used for in description of the word phone.
Right.
But, like, my aunt, she has an iPad. She also still has a Motorola Razr flip phone.
Oh, wow.
So when it comes to a phone, she going to flip that open. But when it comes to her iPad, that iPad is with her wherever she goes. I don't care if she goes to California, if she goes to the corner store. She uses her iPad. And the tablet's versatility, you got your older ladies that want to just pull out the cookbooks. You got your younger guys that want to write new coding programs on them. You got your people like you that want to produce cookbook shows or podcasts. And then you got other people that are in real estate taking them with them to show them the different showings and signing in with open houses. Then you got your people that are taking pictures out at events. You basically have a studio in your hands or whatever you want to do. My mom uses her iPad plenty of times for cooking. And my mom can cook. But she also, my mom is real big on learning new tricks. I think her favorite channel is the Food Network.
Okay. So as our listeners have gotten wind of it, and, you know, I teach high school students, and I teach also a group of middle school kids. And it's amazing to me sometimes, they always want to be on their phone, but when you tell them, look such and such up, they look at you like you're crazy. I'm like, you have an entire library in your pocket. Google such and such. Look it up. And I don't know why they don't make a connection to the computing power that they have versus, man, if they had to go dig through a car catalog, they'd lose their mind.
Well, I think part of that for us, we appreciate it more because we went from the car catalog to the computer to the Dewey Decimal System to the ISBN network to the...
Let's not forget microfiche.
Oh, no, I'm just talking about the different levels of just catalogs. We went from each level of the car catalog to the ISBN system on on to this next network, to the index in the back of a book like you referenced, on to your Yahoos and your Excites and your Lycos. And
yeah,
when
yeah.
the search wars began and Google took over, and now we have your Bing networks and we have all of the competing networks, it comes down to we grew up with it and they were given it. And when you're given something and you don't know the power that it has, many times you don't explore it. I'm not going to put that on all young kids because not all young kids are that way. But one of the ways is our generation, we're different than our parents' generation because our parents' generation, although they may understand it, that late 80s through 2005 was the boom of all of the above. That was the sweet spot that participated in every aspect of it.
Yeah, we went from only having corporations have computing power to having personal PCs and such like that. I mean,
I've been an Apple kid from day one. I've had an Apple II, an Apple IIc, an Apple IIe, an Apple IIgs. When I got to college, I had a Macintosh. I have had Windows computers. I've had access to Chromebooks. I'm ready to go back to a MacBook Pro, but when it came to personal computing, I was there early with it, partially because my father was big on buying computers, but also because my mom was a teacher, and we had access to just about every Apple computer that Apple was feeding every teacher, school system.
Well, my mother was a programmer for a lot of years in COBOL, so I can go back to helping her load the card reader at the university. I can go back to my favorite computer was a Trash 80, you know. Getting it to play backgammon was like, you know, everything.
Oh, my dad had that old school Tandy computer. Remember the Radio Shack computer, the Tandy brand?
Yep. Yeah.
But to get back to food, it's like you were saying that you were telling people to look it up. I think that goes back to just another topic we were discussing earlier. If a person doesn't do it or try it, they don't think to do it. You were using it, referencing it when it came to desserts. I was referencing it when it came to women and beers. Until you try it, you don't know to think of it. And until they think to look up the recipes when they're cooking with teenagers and middle school kids, if they don't try it, they won't think to do it. I guarantee you, once they do it, they don't not go back to it.
Well,
there are certain apps I put on my phone that I had never used, and when I finally use it that first good time, it's like, how was I living without this?
Well, it's kind of that, but kind of not. What I've noticed, they literally will be on Facebook and ask you a question that is so easily searchable, and you want to just scream at them, you can play on Facebook. Why can't you Google this or Google that? And they just, why do we got to go? They have this thing where, why do I have to go through that? I can just ask you. I
have to raise my hand and say I'm guilty of that as well. Like, I could have looked it up, but you're sitting next to me. Can't you just give me the answer? I've done that too, and I don't think that's the right answer. But I know until they do it and they realize how part of the problem is people think one's harder. Until you realize how easy something is, just as quick as Chef Elena can answer, or just as quick as Cake Alexander can answer, because I call you Cake, just as quick as Cake can answer,
even faster.
Google can answer it just as fast.
If not faster. You know, I'm not always there. And it's just, I don't know. Maybe it's a generation.
Well, another reason I think some people are, and I think that I'm guilty of this, if the person that you're asking that you consider an expert on something doesn't have the answer, that gives you an idea of how deep of a search you're going to have to look up.
Okay.
I know that I'm definitely guilty of that. Because if you don't know the answer, then it's like, oh, really, this one? I'm going to have to go past the first page on Google for this one. Because you know when you go on Google, they're going to give you a million things. And sometimes what you're looking for is on page 4 or 5. You want it to be one of the first three.
Sure.
It's not always one of the first three things that comes up in your search.
Okay.
And I know I've done quite a few searches recently, and sometimes when I was looking up something to purchase, and although I wanted to go for the cheaper route, here goes my booming endorsement for Amazon.com. Amazon was the savior of purchasing gods a couple of times within this last week. I was like, well, I tried to go to somebody else, but hey, it ended up being cheaper to you. And the good thing about Amazon on these particular products, they have the expensive ones on there and the cheap ones. And sometimes when all you need is the cheap one, Amazon should have been my first stop.
Got you. Yeah, they've really changed marketplace advertising.
Oh, I remember when they were just a bookstore and people were buying only books from them.
Right, right.
I was in college during that time period.
Yeah, and all of those things come into play. Before we wrap up here in a couple of minutes, let's talk briefly about how keyed in food is for you in any celebration. I always say that, you know, I get to participate in some of the best days of my customers' lives because they're calling me for the wedding, they're calling me for the birthday, they're calling me for the graduation. And it always seems like there's more to a celebration than just being with friends and family. There's the community aspect of it. What is your favorite part of celebrating?
I'll say this one. It's not even necessarily a celebration. I'll say this one. I'm gonna put out a stereotype, but I'm not gonna put which ethnicity is often correlated with.
All right.
There's a certain group culture that is considered to not be able to have a meeting without having food there.
There's several.
And I think it's 100% correct for all of them, even if it's for all cultures and they just attach it to themselves. I don't mind that stereotype. I love food. I don't care if I'm about to look at spreadsheets for the next hour if food is next to me, or if I'm about to have a fun talking about planning a concert or a sporting event or a carnival. Food is there. I love it. I mean, one thing that my family truly despises about me, and they know I love steak, they know I love lobster, I love seafood, I love chicken, I love it all. Every year on my birthday, the only thing I want for my birthday, the absolute only thing, and they can't understand it, even on the quote-unquote milestone birthday, all I want is pizza and beer. And now, if you ask me on the next day, I might want to go to steak and lobster the next day. I might want to go do this on the next day. I might want to go do that on the next day. But on my birthday, I got a specific pizza spot that I like going to, Beverly Fox's on 100th and Western.
Know it well.
And not just Fox's, but specifically Beverly Fox's.
Okay. It's
all of the Fox's you see everywhere else, they're still the same company, but the original one.
Yeah, there's
on 99th or 100th and Western. That's my favorite one. I want beer and pizza, and I enjoy it. But when it comes to just celebrations, I love the aspect of, oh, it's warm outside, we're gonna throw a barbecue. Oh, it's cold outside, we're gonna throw a barbecue. The randomness of food sometimes is the most enjoyable. I mean, there are women that love the concept that said, I wish my husband or my boyfriend would just say, we're going on a date and we're going here, this and there, he just come pick me up and he controls everything. Usually when a guy does that, there's food involved in it there. Even if it's carnival food or restaurant, or we stopped on the way to the spot. Food is a part of it. I love food. And be it healthy food or not healthy food, the problem is people don't know what tastes good. Now, I know a person in the music industry, India Ari. She has been a vegan as long as I've known her.
Yeah, yeah.
She loves going to certain cities because Soul Veg is her spot. Atlanta and Chicago are the Soul Veg spot capitals, and she will max on some Soul Veg. And Soul Veg is good food, and I will never forget there's a show on PBS based here in Chicago called Check Please. They went to Soul Veg, and Soul Veg is known as, with hence the name Soul, is a black vegetarian spot or black vegan spot.
Yep.
But if you've ever watched Check Please, there's all types of cultures that are on that show, and people are enjoying it. And when each one of the guests, they're introducing one of their favorite restaurants, and they're introducing them to it, they went, and the other guests, they said, I'm going to be honest with you, I like meat, so I thought I was not going to enjoy soul veg. I went in there, and everything on the menu that I had tasted good. One of my other favorite episodes of Soul Veg, one of my friends, Maze Jackson, we just call him Maze, he took them to MacArthur's on the west side. Yes, he took them to MacArthur's on Check Please. That within itself. And then I took someone to that same MacArthur's that was a vegetarian. MacArthur's has a lot of vegetarian food that was not cooked in meat so that this person could sit there and enjoy it with me. Now, right. I had catfish along with all my sides. They just allowed this person to get an extra helping of a different side for their protein.
Got
it. Comes down to expanding and opening your mind to something. Because I'll never forget, I'm a big surf and turf person. You all have heard me say steak and lobster many a times just on this episode. I went to a business function, and I saw something on the menu. It was steak and lobster, and they were supposed to be paying for it. I had decided I was going to pay for my own food. They wouldn't let me. I'll tell you, this was the very first time I had ever even thought that someone would even do this. I was thinking that should be considered blasphemous, what you're about to do to this lobster. They had deep-fried lobster tail. That was probably the best lobster tail I had had up to that point.
Okay, that's interesting.
I mean, I've had lobster tail other ways, deep-fried and not deep-fried. I've had it grilled. I've had it broiled. I've had it boiled. Steamed,
yeah, I mean, it's versatile
it.
As long as you don't overcook it.
Overcook it,
that,
right.
You know, that rubbery kind of consistently comes out.
Well, one of the things that I learned about when you deep fry lobster, because I came home and did it myself, I had messed it up, and I did it right. Lobster cooks faster than just about anything I know of that you could throw in a deep fryer.
Yeah, you basically have to flash it, and that's it.
Let me put it this way. You try to put lobster in it for the same amount of time you put in some French fries, you just overcooked it.
Yeah.
Right.
I love our conversations, I'm sure. I'll invite you on repeatedly from now on. So, you know, when it's not football season, expect to get the phone call.
Oh, and just so you know, our show, Football Fan Rush Radio, I spoke to the other hosts of the show. We would like for the Giant Fork and Spoon Network to join us on our show, especially closer to the football season, so you can give people different ideas of how to what they can tailgate with and some newer ideas or what they can eat after their normal tailgate food. We always have at least two tailgate shows a season, one before the season and one right around the Super Bowl, and we would love for the Giant Fork and Spoon Network to join us on Football Fan Rush Radio.
Deal.
Both shows are on the Blog Talk Network, Blog Talk mm-hmm. Radio Network.
Absolutely. Because just like you said, when I was working for the Bears, and, you know, most people think of hot dogs and beer when it comes to a game, but no, we did so many different things and different places for different reasons, including I didn't know that you could rent the space out and have your bar mitzvah there. That was just blow my mind.
Oh yes, the Cadillac room. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, I did two bar mitzvahs there, and I was like, oh, my God, how much money are these people spending, you know?
It's just oh, no. And you'd be surprised. The Cadillac Room is still one of the least expensive Chicago spots. I still will never forget I was working for the Museum of Science and Industry. The richest man in Chicago, he paid for the wedding for his daughter. And just to give you an idea, the wedding itself was held at Navy Pier.
And then
he paid for that.
For the reception?
They came to the Museum of Science and Industry for the reception. Oh, and to make it even worse, this is just to tell you how rich this man was. This was during the summer of 1995 or 96. No, later than that. It was during the summer, late, maybe in the later 19, well, maybe 96, 97. And the air conditioning in the Museum of Science and Industry went out. This man paid for a bubble to be put inside the museum and pumped in air conditioning just for his guests.
Oh, wow.
So the richest man in Chicago will get creative when he needs to.
Okay.
His daughter wanted the reception there. It was held there. And this time period was before Sam Adams was big in the Midwest, because at that point in the mid-90s, it was still only an northern East Coast thing, northeast Coast thing, to be more specific. And they shipped in cases upon cases upon cases of Sam Adams. That was when I had my first Sam Adams.
All right, cool.
And I was not old enough to drink at that point, but I still was going to partake in my first Sam Adams.
Well, things happen.
All right. And beer and drinks. I know your listeners don't need to keep hearing me talk, so you already tried to end the show once, so let me let you end it this time.
Yeah, it was great having you on, and some of my listeners will notice that we tried to go live today, but we're having some technical difficulties, so we fell back on recording and uploading later. I will get this up in a little while, and hopefully Chicago will get an opportunity to partake in the conversation online or at our blog page, Giant Fork and Spoon at Blogger. And we've got a lot of stuff going on, and the summer's here, people. I'm so happy it's nice. I don't know what to do with myself. So until I fought off the urge of running to go buy some charcoal, because I use it up all over the winter, I'm going to have to check y'all later. Thanks for listening. It's Giant Fork and Spoon. We love you. Peace.